What do you think you're doing? You're listening to Crime Quest, a podcast covering the cold, the solved, and the theories. Join us.
So we are almost professional now.
Yeah, we both have microphones.
Yeah, so I stole mine from my kid. He hasn't used it for YouTube, so he didn't use it, so he loses it. Yeah, and we are not recording in the library, so we didn't have to wait for a study room.
Which is awesome, but there will be some echoes, so
yeah.
Sorry about that.
Hopefully it won't be too bad,
but there won't be typing.
Yes.
So, shout out to that person on Twitter
It was on Twitter.
That said they had to stop listening halfway through because of the typing.
That was good to know, actually, because it doesn't bother me when I listen.
Yeah.
So I didn't even think about other people might find things weird that we do or something like that. I guess you learn.
No, I didn't even think about it. So thank you. Yeah. We're not typing this time. We actually have old school pens and paper.
Yes.
For notes.
So
what are we talking about today,
Amanda? All right. So this is going to be a long one, I think, but it's a really kind of fascinating case. We're talking about the Short murders. Word of warning to if this is involving kids, and some triggering stuff. So if it's something that, if sexual assault triggers you, please use caution when listening. So the Short family, we had Michael Short. He was 50 years old. His wife, Mary, was 36 years old. And Jennifer Short was their 9-year-old daughter. So on August 15th, 2002, the bodies of Michael and Mary Short were found by one of their employees who had come to the house to report for work. Michael's body had been found in the garage, and he had a single small caliber gunshot to the head. More than likely, the police concluded that he had been asleep when he was killed and that his death had been instantaneous, so he didn't feel a thing, luckily. Mary was also found in her bed, dead by a single shot to the head. Their 9-year-old daughter, Jennifer, she was nowhere to be found. And there was no sign of forced entry into the house, but the phone lines had been cut.
All right, so that makes me think that that whole thing was premeditated.
Yeah.
Who cuts the phone lines?
Yeah, and there's a really good theory that I think is like the top thing that the FBI and the police are looking at now, that I think that's going to make a lot of sense. So the Shorts actually lived in Oak Level, Virginia. It's in Henry County. It's actually closer, again, to the west of the state, but more southwest than completely west. It's about 20 to 25 minutes from the North Carolina state line, and it's near Martinsville. So if anybody does race cars, the Martinsville Speedway is there. I think it's kind of big.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not into...
I believe that's where the NASCAR... They have NASCAR.
The NASCAR, race. Yeah.
The NASCAR occurs.
Like the Facebook.
The Facebook, the NASCAR.
Yeah, so I know I always see people going there, but I've never been there. I didn't know how big it was.
I've also never been. I know where it is. I've never been there.
Gotcha. So yeah, it's close to Danville, too, which is...
Danville.
Closer to us, actually.
It's Danville.
Yeah. Danville? Oh, okay.
Danville.
See, I'm losing my street cred here. So the Shorts lived in Oak Level, Virginia, which I just said. They actually lived right off of U.S. Highway 220, and it's one of those, like, half country roads, half highways that goes up through Virginia where you actually do have places you need to stop. There's a stoplight every so often. They had a small house. Is a nice house, but they did not have close neighbors. It was not in a neighborhood setting. It was literally like right off the highway. You could see it from the highway. And they also didn't stay in close contact with their family. Like, they didn't check up on each other apparently regularly. So,
well, I just want to point out that if they lived right off the highway, like,
yeah,
that, first of all, they don't have neighbors that are
right
keeping an eye on their home. I haven't seen pictures of the house. I did see a picture of the house, but I didn't notice close neighbors anyway.
No.
So it makes me think that it's even easier for someone to just drop in and drop out. Nobody says, nobody
exactly
saw anything. But,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't know how close the closest neighbor is, but I did see the house and read that there because they were not in a neighborhood. And I guess these are country, these are more country houses, rural houses. They're going to be a little further apart when they're on the highway.
Yeah.
So, and because they didn't stay in close contact with family, I guess there was no communication there that anything was wrong. So I guess that...
So why was there no close contact with family?
They didn't say. They don't... I've never seen why. It doesn't seem like they were estranged from their family at all. I'm just guessing, you know, you get busy and if you live in different places and don't see each other all the time. Like, I see my brother all the time because he's in town and our kids do stuff together. But, like, my family that's out of town, I don't talk to them as much as I should. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Ohio, I didn't talk to my brother as much as I should. So it's, I think you could still be kind of... I mean, you don't have anything going on with them. You just don't necessarily touch base on a regular basis.
I just wanted to make sure there wasn't, like, any...
Yeah, there was no indication of that at all. So, Jennifer, little 9-year-old Jennifer, she was described as a happy and easygoing child by her friends and other parents and her coaches. She was a good student. She participated in sports, like softball. Apparently, she did like softball. She went to church. She was pretty active, apparently, with extracurriculars. So Michael and Mary actually did own their own business. It was called MS Mobile Home Movers, and that's exactly what it sounds like. They moved mobile homes for people. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the business had closed several years earlier, and that's according to a bunch of news outlets at the time. I can't get it one way or the other. There's calls that it had been closed a couple of years earlier, and then some saying it was still open. But there were indications that possibly Michael may have been doing jobs on the side. So his company could still have been gone. He was just doing, like, individual jobs for people.
So his business, not...
Yeah, the actual business. Okay. The MS Mobile Home Movers had closed at this point, apparently. So the side jobs that he did, he would hire migrant workers to help him, which kind of makes sense if you're not running running an LLC or a business like that. It's easier just to hire migrant workers or illegal immigrants to help you because you can pay them in cash, which he did apparently. And then at the time of the murders, the family was actually considering moving to Myrtle Beach in South Carolina. In the spring and summer of 2002, Michael had gone there several times to scout for employment. So it sounded like they were really pretty serious about this whole moving to South Carolina thing. It came up quite a few times.
Did they say why? Has anybody given...
Employment reasons, it looks like. Yeah. And I would guess if their business closed, they may not have been getting... They may not have had enough business just from side jobs to, because apparently he was interviewing for positions down there. He wasn't looking to, like, move the business. He was looking for steady employment from someone else. So I'm guessing maybe, I don't know, it was 2002. The economy was okay then. Maybe they just wanted a change. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no real definitive answer on that, unfortunately.
I'm just wondering, like, South Carolina, I mean, that's two states away.
Yeah.
Myrtle Beach, like, why that?
I don't know. Maybe,
he must have gotten some kind of lead.
Yeah, I think he had gone to interviews, so he must have been talking to people down there.
Well, and I do know that if he was thinking of getting into maybe doing the same thing he was doing with his business, that...
The cat's eating
dinner right now.
That is not typing, we swear.
Yeah, I promise it's not. Hopefully no one can hear that.
Yeah, I hope not.
What I was going to say was, I know that from my experience being at, like, beaches in Delaware, there's a large community of people that live at the beach but live in, like, these giant mobile home parks.
Right.
They're really nice.
Yeah.
They... basically, that I'm wondering if that's kind of what he was thinking, is getting into that.
That
more.
Makes sense, yeah.
Because there are a lot of mobile home parks.
Yeah. And I would imagine that whole moving them thing is a big business for that.
Yeah, plus Myrtle Beach, it's like a fun area to live, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe it's cheap. Maybe at the time it was cheap.
I don't know. I don't think it's, like, hugely expensive, like you would see. I mean, if you're on the beach, definitely. But, like, if you're just looking for, like, normal house... For, like, normal, everyday, middle-class living, I think it's pretty affordable compared to other places.
Yeah, if anybody knows things, let us know. We're just speculating.
Yeah.
Okay, so go on.
So yeah, so let's look at the timeline. It's a pretty long timeline, but we can kind of see where they go from when the murders are discovered and throughout the police investigation and the process, and see what, and we can look at what happened with Jennifer. So on August 15th, 2002, that's when Mary and Michael Short were found. Jennifer was missing, so the police did issue an Amber Alert for Jennifer, and that was because they did suspect that she had been abducted. August 18th, 2002, still nothing about Jennifer, but a reward fund was set up for information about her at SunTrust Bank. August 19th, 2002, the next day, the results of the police search of the home are filed. Apparently, the police removed 64 items from the home, including two 22 caliber shell casings that were found near the Shorts bodies, as well as several weapons. And the police were also searching for a red or dark colored truck that was leaving the home, that was seen leaving the home the morning of the murders, which conflicts with some stuff that we'll touch on later on, that color of the truck. But the police have also stated at this point that they don't think the murderer is someone, is a stranger. They think it's somebody who knows the family.
Did they indicate if they believe that the murder happened early morning, August 15th, or like the night before?
You know, I think it did. It seems like it happened at some point, either in the late 14th. Evening or in the early morning of the 15th.
Okay.
It didn't sound like they had been there for a couple of days.
Okay.
It sounds like it. Everything like happened within that.
Yeah.
One night. Thank goodness.
If.
Yeah.
You're right. They
would. Yeah, I don't think anybody was there, for that. So August 22nd, they did get a new search warrant for the house. The results from that one show that a .22 caliber pistol was removed from the Short home along with other weapons. And I don't know if those are the same weapons from before or if they found additional weapons at that point. And they never say what those weapons are. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a shotgun. Maybe he went hunting. I can imagine. I think out there it's a pretty big hunting population because there's really good hunting. I don't hunt, but I think they've probably got really good areas for hunting out there. On August 23rd, 2002, Michael and Mary Short's funeral service was held. And there's really no information about the funeral, whether family attended. I think family would have attended. From what we've got to talk about later, I think family probably did attend. August 26, 2002, this is where we kind of start to get an inkling of where the police, where the investigation is going with the police. So someone provided them with a tip that when Mary Short worked at a company called Pluma in 1992, she may have had a stalker.
I did read that.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. So the company itself supplied t-shirts and fleece for promotional wearables. They did cease operations in 1999. So that was 3 years before the murders.
All right. So she was unemployed.
I think she left both to raise Jennifer and because they had their own business at that point. Because it said she did work for the company, for the family company too. September 4th, 2002, Michael Short's body was exhumed and they did additional forensic testing on it. And I think the reason they did that was because when they were talking about the stalker for Mary, a cop actually made a comment questioning Jennifer's paternity, and he later recanted that. But from what I read, I believe that's why they exhumed his body, because they wanted to see about a DNA test to establish paternity. And it ended up being absolutely nothing. There was no question that he was her father, but it all came from like a throwaway comment from a police officer.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I read about the stalker and they thought that maybe he was Jennifer's real father.
Yeah, and yeah. That was all.
That was part of why they felt they needed to. Because yeah. That would have been motive.
Yeah, and that was all based on that one offhand remark from the police officer.
Okay.
And we don't know if, I don't know if he like heard it from somebody that she worked with, but...
I would say it was probably worth investigating.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It's unfortunate that they had to do that. They had to actually exhume the body.
Right.
I think that it would have been a good lead had it turned out a different way. But
right.
Okay.
Yeah. So then September 5th, the postal officials deny police access to the Shorts' mail, but they do end up granting them access to it later. I guess they were looking for any sort of information that could help them. The reward fund that was set up has grown to over $50,000. Let's see, September 15th. This is where they call off search efforts for Jennifer. They're still looking for her, but it's not as active. They've eliminated additional land, helicopter, and dive searches. So, yeah, that was... That kind of gives an indication that they're not hopeful about finding her. September 19th, photos of Mary Short in 1992 are released, and they hope that the pictures would jog someone's memory about her employment at Pluma and about her possible stalker. All right, September 20th, and this is where we get into her family. I don't think they were estranged, because Jennifer's aunt and uncle were named as her legal guardians if she was found alive.
Okay.
We don't know if they were Mary or Michael's relatives. Maybe it was Mary, since they had a different last name. September 26th, the remains of a body are found in Rockingham, North Carolina, which is just over, I think it's about 20 minutes out over the border in North Carolina. And it matched Jennifer's general description. The body was that of a 9 to 10 year old Caucasian female who had been shot in the head. The remains that they found were part of the skull, the rib cage, teeth, part of a jaw, and hair. So they didn't even find an actual body. They just found remains.
Wow. So
yeah.
It had decomposed.
I don't know if it,
for
I would
month?
Imagine. Yeah.
I guess. I guess in the heat outside.
Yeah, that's true. And we don't know what the person who murdered her might have done to her body either.
That's true. And who found the body?
I think it was just found on a search. I never saw who actually found it. And then they did submit the remains for DNA testing. Those came back October 2nd, but they came back inconclusive. 2 days later, on October 4th, though, they do positively ID the girl as Jennifer Short, and the search is over. So now we have a triple murder. One is a child. So October 5th, investigators make plans to travel to Canada. And this guy is really kind of fascinating. I want to talk about him more later too, when we get into suspects and motives. But the whole reason the police went to, were going to Canada was to question a man called Garrison S. Bowman. He's from Mayodan, North Carolina, who was arrested October 3rd in Inuvik, Northwest Territories, for immigration violations. But what's interesting is that the police actually state that Bowman's not a suspect. He's just a person of interest in the case.
Person of interest.
Yeah. October 7th is when the police do release that Bowman is a possible witness. He was being held in Canada. He was awaiting a deportation hearing. And then the reward fund that was originally for information about finding Jennifer is now reclassified as needing information about the person who murdered her. It's actually gotten up to $67,000. I think that's great. I mean, not great, but I think it shows how much the people in the community cared, because that is a smaller community. Those are smaller communities.
Yeah.
October 10th, the investigators went to Canada to question Bowman. October 12th, Canada did rule that they were going to deport Bowman for the immigration law violations. So the police postponed his interview until he returned to the U.S. Also on October 12th, Jennifer Short's funeral took place. October 22nd, Bowman was being held in the Roanoke County Jail after being deported. I love that he was deported from Canada. You hosers. Sorry. The police interviewed Bowman for 3 hours in the Roanoke County Jail. And then on the 23rd, they decide that he will be held there until a grand jury is able to question him. So October 29th, the investigators traveled to Canada because Bowman's van was still there and they wanted to inspect it for possible forensic evidence. October 30th, and we're still in 2002, we're still within that first few months after the murders took place. Bowman was released from jail after being held under a federal material witness warrant. So I guess maybe the local police didn't have the authority to hold him. I guess since the FBI was involved, maybe they had to have the, they've got the authority to keep him in jail until they need to. On November 1st, investigators returned to the States, and they brought back items from Bowman's van. November 9th, I can't figure out who this guy is. I've looked him up. I guess Harry he's Lemons. I think he might be one of the, a witness, quote unquote witness to the, to something. But I can't find his name anywhere, but I'm pretty sure, on November 9th, he had actually submitted to a lie detector test, and it showed he was being truthful about statements he made to the police regarding Bowman.
But was that Bowman's, I'm probably going to jump ahead, but was Bowman's landlord?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I have a feeling there were witnesses, but it also doesn't jive with the information we find out about witnesses, who called the police about Bowman either. November 12th, Bowman and Lemons both appeared before the grand jury in closed proceedings. Everything was kept confidential, including whether or not Bowman and Lemons testified. December 7th, the Short family home and its contents were sold at auction, and the proceeds went directly to the family's estate. So now we're into 2003. On January 4th, the results came back from forensics tests that were performed on some of the items collected from Bowman's residences in North Carolina and Canada, and the tests actually are negative for any forensic evidence. January 15th, I'm going to get a little annoyed here with this one. So after Jennifer's remains were found, for the fund, some donors actually withdrew their contributions to the reward fund. So it's gone from 67,000 to 42,000.
That's interesting.
I can't think of any reason to withdraw the fund. You're still looking for the person that killed them.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point is the fund is set up so that people will come forward. It's an incentive.
Right. I mean, I'm sure they'll do it for 42,000 as much as they would do it for 67, but it would never occur to me to go, like, take back my contribution somewhere.
Yeah,
I don't know. That struck me badly.
That's strange.
Yeah. April 2nd in Charlottesville, a special grand jury that was unrelated to the first grand jury with Bowman and Lemons reviewed the Short case. And then April 16th, the police did conduct an additional search in Rockingham County where Jennifer's remains were found. They wanted to see if they could find any additional evidence. On May 6th, the Roanoke Forensic Lab, who's processing the lab results, they're actually given additional assistance so they can get those results out quickly. July 12th would have been Jennifer Short's 10th birthday. And then July 23rd, the police dammed the river in Rockingham County near where Jennifer was found because they were trying to, again, conduct a more in-depth search of the area and see if they wanted to see if damming the river would bring up any evidence that they had not found yet. So that's the timeline. After that, the case kind of faded away, but not, it was never not under investigation. The police and the FBI have kept this open the whole time. And they obviously still talk about it and still work on it because there have been updates within the last 2 or 3 years. So again, we're here 14 years later and the killers were never discovered. The case is still open, and the FBI, as of 2010, was still asking for information about the case from anyone who might have information. And then in 2015, the sheriff of Henry County was asking for people who knew Jennifer to come forward. So that is basically the timeline of the case. It feels like it moved really, it feels like they like really moved quickly in the beginning. Because I guess it was a, I don't remember hearing about this, but I didn't live here at the time, mm-hmm. but it seems like it would have been a very high profile case. It would have been something that would have been all over the news constantly.
Yeah. I'm before we get into the suspects, cause I did read about this. So I know a little more about it than we've told so far, but
okay.
I just want to point out to the listeners how interesting it is that they really didn't come up with much of anything when you look at how much evidence they had.
Yeah. And how much manpower was on
it. How much manpower, how much evidence. Now, I'm not discrediting the police at all.
No, not at all.
In the sense that I think that they have done what they can, but mm-hmm. I also think it's interesting how little they've been able to... How no real suspects have come about except for the Bowman suspect.
Right, and he was never actually even...
So let's talk about that.
Let's
get into the rest of it. And then you'll see what we're talking about.
Yeah. So we'll move on to suspects and also possible motives because there really was only one initial suspect in this. Garrison S. Bowman. The early investigation involved him as a possible witness and person of interest, but again, the police never stated that he was actually a suspect in the case. He lived in North Carolina and in a mobile home, and the mobile home was actually only a mile and a half from where they found Jennifer's remains. So the relationship with Bowman, he may have also known Michael Short and had problems with him, and his mobile home moving business. Bowman had actually hired a man in Virginia to move his mobile home, and if he didn't move it or return his money, Bowman actually said, quote, that he would have to kill him.
So it says Bowman may have had problems with Michael Short and his mobile home moving business.
Yeah.
An acquaintance of Bowman.
Yeah, it was someone who came forward to talk to the police.
That was an acquaintance of Bowman.
Right, I'm sorry.
Complained that Michael had said he had complained about Michael and said he had paid a man in Virginia to move his mobile home. And then if he didn't move it or return his money, Bowman said he would have to kill him.
Right.
But did Bowman say that it was Michael, or was he just like, I paid a man in Virginia to do this?
He doesn't specifically say it there, mm-hmm. but I think the acquaintance said that it was Michael.
It was Michael.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that right there is just crazy. If that was Michael, that's a hell of a coincidence right there.
I mean, I know people make offhand comments, but I think it's quite an offhand comment to make considering that the family is deceased.
Right, exactly. So again, this is where we get to the fact that Michael's company may have gone out of business several years earlier, but he could have been offering his services just as, you know, a lone wolf there. There's no evidence showing that the business deal had actually occurred between Bowman and Michael, other than the acquaintance's words. And Bowman did claim that he had never even met Michael or his family. So if you look at Bowman's past, then we do see questionable judgment and behavior where he pulled a gun on his landlord. He installed a false floor in his van. And he moved to Canada the day after the murders.
What is a false floor?
I'm guessing it's something you can pick up and you can store stuff underneath of it.
No.
I mean, how were they not? This just kills me.
I mean, I'm not saying
it's so
makes
weird.
Guilty, but
no,
it's like,
not at all. It's just so weird to have all of this happen, like right around the time that these murders occur. What? I don't know. It's crazy. So, but I mean, the police didn't find any solid evidence that linked him to the crimes. And they did do a really thorough investigation of his home and his possessions, and forensic testing was done. And I guess nothing was found that could actually be used as kind of a smoking gun. The one thing that they did find, and I don't have a picture of this, nor do I have a ton of information on it, but it was a map with an X on it, and it was within the vicinity, that X was within the vicinity of the Short residence, but we don't actually know. Maybe it was a map of Virginia, and the X was close to the county line where they lived, and it looked like it was closer up to them. Or maybe it was a more specific map, and the X was directly on their home. The police never released any information about that about what the map actually looked like.
So they have the map, and they have not said
what. Right.
They said
right.
The X was on the map, but we're not going to tell any. We're not right. going to explain what. Okay.
And since he lived right over the border in North Carolina, that might. I mean, him having a map of Virginia wouldn't be that odd, if he was driving around.
Right.
So as far as how the police actually became interested in Bowman, two men did report to the investigators that they saw Bowman carrying Jennifer, like a day or two after the murder. And then they did admit that they had lied to get the reward money, and they were later indicted for false information. So we had talked about that Lemons guy. I don't know if if he's one of them, but he passed a lie detector test. So I'm thinking he's separate from these two men that had taken Bowman or had given Bowman's name to the police. So that's Bowman.
Well, it sounds like Bowman didn't have a lot of friends.
Yeah, he seems like he wasn't a very pleasant guy. Maybe just kind of a loner and just didn't deal with people well. So I mean, that's him. He's the only real thing he's the only thing that's even close to a real suspect.
Well, So the reason he went to Canada was why?
He never said he was immigrating to. I guess he was moving to Canada. They didn't say why he would have. Yeah,
right after
the day
after
the murders, you moved to Canada.
You moved to Canada.
Yeah,
and get.
Right.
That's
exactly.
I could. I mean, we're all like.
I feel like if.
Yeah, like of course he was a suspect.
Yeah, and I feel like even though they didn't have the forensic evidence, I feel like. This is something that would have been a crapshoot in, like, a jury trial. Like, I almost feel like the circumstantial evidence might have been enough to sway people.
What happened to Garrison?
Nothing. There's no information about after this, but, I mean, he wasn't arrested. He wasn't held after that initial time after being deported from Canada. So, I mean, that's... They let him go after... They couldn't hold him for anything.
Okay.
So he's our main suspect. There's a few more. We don't actually have, like, actual people as suspects. We've got more of ideas as suspects from the police as well. So then the next person that could have been considered a suspect would have been Mary Short's 1992 stalker. Initially, after the murders, the investigators were attempting to gather as much information about the man who'd been stalking Mary Short at Pluma, her place of employment. After the photos of Mary Short in 1992 were released, the one showing that she worked at Pluma, the police received a number of tips, and this was just kind of cute, including a former coworker's memory that Mary had been nicknamed Little Mary while working there. They also received a tip that the stalker may have driven a white pickup. So the stalker had apparently harassed Mary in the parking lot of the company, and security had asked him to leave the premises several times. And then the police were actually called on him once when he entered the plant without authorization and refused to leave. So, I mean, it sounds like it was fairly... It sounds like it would have been scary for Mary to have... him, like, harassing you in the parking lot and then coming into your work office. And he did kind of seem like an early lead for the police, but they were never able to find the man's identity.
So obviously the guy didn't work at Pluma.
No. We don't know how he knew Mary, where he knew her from. But again, that was where that offhand comment from the cop came about Jennifer's paternity. And we don't know
because
if that maybe
that
came from
been,
a tip.
That would have been... 9 years prior.
Yeah.
So I could see. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that information actually did come from a tip from someone. So the cop wasn't saying it just to say it. I think it was something that he had heard from someone who worked with Mary. But it didn't have any credence. So they were never able to find him. So if he was, you'd think they would though, if the police had to remove him from the plant, you'd think they'd get his name. And they'd have that on file. But I guess maybe they didn't arrest him, they just kicked him out.
That's probably what happened.
Yeah. So the third...
And they didn't have I don't know if they had cameras.
Probably
back then.
Not.
And if they did, they do that thing, which I don't understand.
Oh, the scrubbing?
Where they scrub the footage. And it's like, what's the point of doing that if you're going to scrub the footage every 48 hours?
Right. Exactly. Anyway. So that's the second, suspect motive person. The third one is the child molester theory. In August of 2015, the current Henry County Sheriff, Lane Perry, he announced that the abduction of Jennifer may have been the main motive for the murders. And the information that is on the 2010 FBI bulletin about the case kind of seems to support this theory as well. And if a pedophile did target the family with the intent to kidnap Jennifer, the killer more than likely sexually abused her before she was killed. So this is the one theory. If it's not Bowman, this is what I kind of lean towards. And there's some information in the FBI bulletin that'll kind of support that.
I think part of it is that Jennifer's was removed from the home.
Right.
And the parents were left there.
Right.
I think that's a strong indication that there's...
They weren't just there to kill them and take the money.
The parents were an accessory to what they really wanted,
right,
which was the daughter.
Right.
But let's see what the FBI bulletin
said. So the FBI bulletin was released in 2010. It was about the open murder case, and on it they had put 19 clues that could help solve the crimes. The really notable one of them was the 14th one. It said, quote, investigators are attempting to identify any person or persons who were in contact with Jennifer Short between June 1st and August 14th, 2002. For instance, there may be a coach, teacher, friend, parent, and or neighbor who was in contact with Jennifer through such events and or activities as softball, dance, church, birthday parties, etc. The FBI then asked anyone with information to call the provided tip line number.
I wonder why the short time frame. June 1st, August. So just a...
That is interesting.
Just 2 months of...
Yeah.
They must have... So what else does it say? Did they say why?
Did they... Well, yeah.
Okay.
So the other clues that they give and the calls to action, they also shed some light on the possible motives as well as some information that could help find the murderer. Apparently, a man was observed on Highway 220 within the vicinity of the Short home in the early morning hours of August 15th, 2002. And we had already talked about this man. But the difference between the original story that I saw, that the man was in a dark red or brownish truck, the FBI bulletin actually describes it as a white single cab, 2-ton white truck manufactured between 1998 and 2002. The FBI included an artist's rendering of the vehicle, and they also provided a photograph of the cab portion of a truck that was similar in appearance to the unknown vehicle, but not necessarily identical. The cab of the unknown vehicle was also said to be similar in appearance to a 4500 series international truck. So what's kind of interesting to me about this is, you know, originally we hear the red, dark brown truck, or the dark red brown truck that's near their house in early morning and seen leaving the house.
How do we know that that's not the truck of the employee that
we don't
them?
Okay. Well, I guess the employee actually,
I guess they would
have, they would have kept him, but it could have,
right.
Yeah, we don't know that it might have been another employee as well. We don't know that.
Okay.
So then, and this is a white truck,
mm-hmm.
but if you remember, Mary's coworker, who provided a tip to the police about that stalker, thought he drove a white pickup.
Interesting.
Yeah. That doesn't necessarily mean there's a connection, but it is interesting that they would have
So they thought the stalker drove a pickup.
Yeah.
Well, they said this truck was like 1998. Yeah.
So it wouldn't have been the same truck, but you know, I mean, I don't know. I tend to stick with the same cars and colors.
Yeah.
As I get new cars, but so I mean, it strikes me as interesting that they changed the color of the truck from the initial color.
Yeah.
Because you can't really mistake dark red for white.
For white.
No. I mean, brown may, yeah, brown I can understand, but white and red are completely different colors, and they're visible at a big distance, too.
I also think that, I don't know if I really am on the side of the stalker theory.
Yeah.
Just because we know so, I would love to know more about this person. I think everyone does.
Yeah.
But I also think that the reason that this happened seemed to be more focused on Jennifer.
Right.
And not the mom, not Mary. And Mary, this guy was focused on Mary.
Right.
Not the daughter.
Yeah.
If he was focused on the daughter, then
that's different.
Yeah, but it seems like that. What did they say as to why? I mean, I guess Mary, stalkers, I've never had a stalker. I don't know what that's like. But from what I understand, listening to other things about stalkers, is they're usually people that the person has had a relationship with before.
Right.
And they are now not leaving them alone.
Right.
Or on the more extreme level, it's someone that maybe the person has had like a very superficial, very light friendship with.
Right.
And the person has taken it on to be this other thing that doesn't. It doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
And so they end up getting kind of infatuated and obsessed.
Right. Right. Kind of like the actress who was murdered by the guy who was stalking her. She was on My Sister Sam. It was years ago.
Oh, I don't know.
It was Rebecca something. It was really... Oh. She was on a sitcom with Pam Dauber from Mork and Mindy. And it was... I just remember hearing about that. But she had a stalker and he didn't know her. He was just obsessed with her.
Yeah. I haven't had a stalker, but I've definitely had instances when I was waiting tables where I had a customer. I had stopped working at a restaurant and I started working at another, and he was he would always sit in my section, whatever.
Yeah.
I start working at another restaurant that's like 45 minutes away, and he found me.
Oh, that's creepy.
And he came into the restaurant and I...
Ew.
Yeah. So it was, obviously I had a business relationship with this person. I was...
But you weren't encouraging anything outside of that. Him, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty scary.
And, yeah.
You know, it could have been something that simple that Mary maybe was...
She wasn't infatuated with him, but he was infatuated with her.
Right. Like maybe she was just really kind to someone.
Yeah.
That's kind of why...
I mean, she seemed...
My favorite murder ladies.
Yeah.
They're always like, don't worry about being mean to someone.
Don't be polite.
Don't be polite.
I have learned a lot from them about that.
Super weird.
They're responsible for me being brave sometimes.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Not to say we're not going to be kind to people, but, there is a limit, and you know when you're acting creepy. I'm sorry, but...
And just a word of warning, if someone's being creepy on Facebook Marketplace, don't give them your address. Like I did by accident.
Good tip, Amanda.
Yeah, I kept an eye out for him the next few days. Apparently, he had a foot fetish with my... he was trying to get a pizza stone, and it was a foot fetish thing. It was weird. He was doing it to a lot of other people, too.
Why?
I was just the only one dumb enough to give him my address because I thought he was coming over in like an hour to get the thing. So anyway,
I wonder if the police departments have like a department that just trolls Facebook to find these people.
Oh, I want that job.
But it's not illegal. Like, what they're doing is not illegal.
No, it's just
creepy. They're
allowed
to be weird.
Yeah, it's just creepy.
We're not going to reciprocate.
No. Yeah. Yeah, no, not at all.
Anyway. Okay, so...
But with Mary's stalker, I feel like the police didn't have a whole lot to grab onto in the first initial investigation, and they needed to feel like they were grabbing onto something and making the community... remain engaged with it. So I don't think they may have ever taken that completely seriously either. I think it may have just been something to keep the community engaged until they were able to, you know, find more information or gather more suspects together. Because it didn't go anywhere after all those tips were in. They couldn't identify the man and they kind of just let it go at that point. And then I think they started focusing on Bowman. So, I can definitely understand why they'd want to have people feel like something's happening and they'll stay engaged with it. So they won't, you know, just stop listening to what the police have to say because they're saying the same thing over and over again. So the truck, yeah.
I was just going to say, there was some information that I was reading online about this that talked about how the police corruption in that county.
Oh, really?
Actually, so,
I did read that. Yeah.
So I don't have it in front of me here, but there was something going on with the police department
right.
at that time.
You're right.
Some corruption.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was interesting that they weren't, I think that lends itself maybe to the, perhaps the evidence not adding up.
Yeah.
Something with, you know, perhaps Michael had found something out in his
possibly,
own business dealings,
yeah.
and that was the motive.
Right.
But again, it's interesting if that were the case, why would they take Jennifer?
Yeah.
Unless the person that they hired to do the killing was, like, I'm just totally speculating.
Yeah, no,
but
I understand.
Let's say that the police, there's police corruption going on in mm-hmm. that area, which is confirmed by some online articles.
Yeah.
I'll post a link to it in the show notes
okay.
that from what I found on it. But let's say that that happened. Michael got wind of it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was, they knew he knew something.
Right, right.
And it had something to do with drugs, I believe.
Yeah, that's a big county with drugs out there, too.
Yeah, not a lot to do out there.
The rural.
There's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
So then they hire someone to off the family because
right.
they do not, you know, they want to cover their butts.
Yeah.
But maybe the person that they hire to do that doesn't, wants to
pedophile tendencies.
Yeah, pedophile
yeah.
tendencies, or maybe they just felt bad in the moment and took Jennifer and
yeah.
was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I feel bad.
Yeah.
And then they ended up just offing her in North Carolina, which is awful.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is awful.
No,
but,
it is.
But I'm just speculating that, and I also think it's interesting that again, the amount of evidence that they have, it's
yeah.
like, why are they not able to find,
yeah.
you know, if the police who are corrupt are handling the evidence?
Right.
I mean, it's no wonder that they've probably not been able to make much leeway, but I do
right.
think, so I think, and again, I have to post the article about it and look at it. I do think that the person that was originally in charge of the investigation is
mm-hmm.
no longer in charge of the investigation.
Okay.
And that there's whoever the person investigating it now, like they've
yeah.
overhauled the department.
Yeah.
So I think at the time there was a lot of corruption going
right.
on with the drugs.
Right. Oh yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
And that could have caused something.
Definitely.
Some things not to be uncovered. And maybe even the police were not involved in it at all. It's
yeah.
just that the nature of what happened or their investigative abilities at the time
mm-hmm.
were hindered because of what was going on in the background.
Right.
And they were trying to investigate something while also trying to cover up what they were doing behind
right.
the scenes. Again, totally speculation. I'm not accusing anyone of
yeah.
anything, but
no,
there are... There are some articles online.
Okay.
I'll post it.
I remember reading
yeah.
about that. The other thing, too, though, is I think the FBI stepped in, like, pretty early in the investigation. And I think if it had involved the police, the FBI didn't have a dog in that fight.
That's true.
They might have uncovered it.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, you're absolutely right. So that whole thing with the police corruption could have been totally unrelated.
Yeah. But it could have been something they were trying to hide, too. I would think it would be really hard to hide it from the FBI, though.
So it says that they also released a composite
yeah.
sketch of the unidentified male that
yeah.
was, like, driving the
That was
truck.
In the truck in the morning at their house.
Described as having a weathered...
Tough. complexion, kind of like that, the sun beaten, I think is what they
like
meant.
Like as a laborer.
Yeah.
Would kind of look. Yeah. That's worked outside for a long time.
Right.
Age consistent with someone in his 40s due to the time that had passed between the murders and the release of the FBI bulletin. They released an age progression composite.
Right. So they had kind of added those those 8 or 9 years onto him.
And then you random Michael sometimes hired day laborers, including illegal immigrants.
Yeah, he did hire illegal immigrants. I don't know if he, I mean, I know you can just go to Home Depot sometimes and there are guys waiting there. I don't know if that's what he did or if they were people he actually knew that he hired on a continual basis. And it sounds like he paid him under the table in cash. So another speculation was that the crime was committed by a former employee who had some sort of beef with him. Maybe, I don't know, I can think if the business went under, they had to have had employees that lost their jobs. Maybe somebody wasn't happy about that. And then the other thing was that the house was also up for sale. So they could move to South Carolina. Maybe the murderer was someone who would come in as a potential buyer. And if it was a pedophile, he targeted Jennifer at that point, and then everything unfolded. That's all from the FBI bulletin and the police in the last few years, the updates that they've given us, or that they've given about the case. The tip line apparently is still open, and the case is still unsolved and open at the same time. Those are the suspects. The other thing that I just wanted to mention, I kind of was looking through this online in terms of the pedophile theory about her being
the target.
Them like monitoring her to check. They would have to have looked for a while to like know their schedules. I would think, especially with a kid who's involved in activities, you need to know when they're coming and going. So he could have, maybe if it was the pedophile.
What day of the week was it?
August. August 15th, 2002.
Okay. We can look it up.
Yeah.
I'm just interested because, like, what if it was a Saturday?
Yeah.
That's an interesting.
Maybe. Or if someone was coming for work, maybe it was.
Well, so we know
a weekday.
Couple of things.
Yeah.
We know that August 15th, children are not in school.
Right.
So really,
especially
it doesn't
not in Virginia.
Matter what day of week it was.
Yeah.
Unless the person knows. And there's not a whole lot of sports stuff going on.
Yeah.
Although I think they start practicing for like baseball and stuff in August.
Soccer, I think, is August. And then like baseball and softball would be like January usually for the spring.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
For the spring season.
Okay. So,
but it sounds like she was pretty busy with friends, and I guess she danced too, so maybe she had dance classes during the summer.
Well,
activities lighten up during the summer.
Yeah, I think you're right though. I think I would be interested to know what Mary and Michael were doing the night before.
Yeah, that would be. I mean, was it just a quiet night at home with Jennifer? Did they not go anywhere?
Was it a Friday night? Like, August 15th a Saturday morning?
Yeah.
And maybe they went out the night before for a family dinner.
Right.
And that's kind of where.
Yeah.
I don't know. I need to look on your phone and see what day of the week.
Oh, okay.
August 15th, 2002 was.
Let's see if I can figure this part out.
I think if you scroll back.
Oh, yeah, I can.
The calendar.
Let's see. If my husband were here, he could tell us without even looking. He's got like some weird talent at it. It was a Thursday.
August 15th was a Thursday, so the 14th was a Wednesday. So
in
the middle of the week.
Church on Wednesday night.
Church Wednesday night.
They may have been out at church that night, because it sounds like they were involved in their church.
Involved in their church. So that's a good point. And if they were consistent about that, people would know that about their schedule.
Right. Right. So maybe the murderer thought maybe if that's what he was doing, because they were at church the night before, people would have seen them at church.
Right.
And this is just speculation that they were at church. Obviously, we don't know that they were at church, but
there's nothing online that I read that said exactly what they were doing leading up to the.
Right. Exactly. And I did see something about the police, curious if anybody wanted to call and tell them if they had seen them in between, like, the 11th and the 14th. Mm-hmm. But they didn't make it sound like nobody had seen them for those 3 days. It was just they wanted more information if someone had.
They also didn't mention if, again, that their bodies were, like, advanced decomposition.
Yeah, when they found them. Sounds like it was, like, pretty fresh, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing with the pedophile theory, and I hate this theory, but it's the one that feels like it's the most plausible to me. There have actually been a couple of other cases that are similar.
Okay.
There's a case in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Coeur d'Alene. Sorry, I speak French. I don't know why I just said that like that. Sorry, cousin who teaches French, if you're listening to this, she would have my head for that. So in Idaho in 2005, May, a man named Joseph E. Duncan murdered a woman named Brenda Groen, her boyfriend, and her 13-year-old son, and then abducted the woman's younger children. She had an 8-year-old named Shasta and a 9-year-old named Dylan. Duncan then took the children to a remote area in Montana where... he held them for months, torturing and sexually abusing and assaulting them. And he did eventually murder Dylan. The 8-year-old girl Shasta was rescued by law enforcement, and Duncan eventually received the death penalty for his crimes. So that's one case where I think he had been watching them ahead of time so he could take the younger kids. The second case, and this is interesting because I remember watching a documentary on this, and this poor girl, Hannah Anderson, was kidnapped by a family friend, James Lee DiMaggio. He had actually gone and killed her mother and 8-year-old brother, Ethan, and then picked her up, I believe it was from cheerleading practice, saying her mother had said that he was going to pick her up, and then he... kidnapped her. He took off with her to rural Idaho. What is with Idaho? And he held her. I don't remember how long, but it was just horrifying, the case, when I saw it on, I think it was ID Discovery, on one of those things. He apparently, I don't believe he... It doesn't... I didn't see any information that she was sexually assaulted, and I don't really remember them saying she was assaulted. I think she was terrified, obviously, and he was using... I think he did use some, like, mind tricks on her.
Yeah.
In Idaho, the police did come, and DiMaggio was killed in a shootout with him. But... and then Hannah was rescued, and she was alive with no visible injuries... She did get treatment at a hospital, and I'm assuming she got lots and lots of therapy. So the reason that the background of that one was that DiMaggio was friends with Hannah's father, who had divorced her mother. And for some reason, DiMaggio had a life insurance policy, and he wanted the proceeds to go to Hannah and Ethan, the 8-year-old, which just strikes me as strange. And there was this whole thing with his family being involved. He had said something to his family about not trusting Hannah and Ethan's parents to manage the money correctly for them. So if they got it, or if he passed away and they got his life insurance. So members of his family called for paternity tests on the kids because they thought that he was the father. That's why he cared and was leaving this life insurance to him.
What?
But apparently he hadn't even met Hannah's mother until she was 6 months pregnant with her. So
really
they pulled
weird.
Back on the paternity test, but it was so strange.
But you're right. I mean, both of these are similar in the sense that this person took Jennifer away.
Right.
And
right. I mean, you take them and you... Take him away.
How far away, again, was Rockingham?
I think it said it was about 25 minutes or so from the North Carolina state line. So probably about 45 minutes to an hour if you're driving down from Oak Level where they lived. So not far, but still, you're in an entirely new state with an entirely different jurisdiction. And I think, I know if there's like an Amber Alert, like in Virginia Beach or D.C., we get them here in Richmond. Mm-hmm. But we don't see Amber Alerts for, like, Raleigh or anything like that.
No.
So even if an Amber Alert had been released for her, would people have been seeing that in North Carolina at that time.
It's plausible. When did they start Amber Alert, though?
I don't remember. Because I want to say it's like 1993 or something. I remember the story. It was a little girl in Texas who went missing named Amber. Let me see. Sorry, I'm going to look it up. 1996.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe there are like, maybe each city or town in the state has sort of an area where they broadcast it to. But again, this was also earlier when we didn't really have phones that would get Amber Alerts. We just saw them on TV or heard them on the radio.
Yeah.
So it would have to be communicated to those news and radio stations. So that, I mean, that's a...
Well, too, so someone found them the next morning.
Yeah.
That was how, okay. So they acted pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Which means that, whoever did this... Either they got lucky,
right,
or they were watching their routine. Because they would have had to do it, like you said, if they were, like, let's say the family went out the night before,
mm-hmm.
they would have had to know that they had to do this within a specific time frame, or else, employees are coming by at random times.
Right, exactly. But then again, if Michael wasn't working a regular schedule.
They said they think Michael was asleep.
Yeah, right? That happened.
So it was probably early morning, late night.
Right.
When it happened.
Yeah. I also found it interesting that he was sleeping in the garage. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. They said he was asleep in the garage when he was killed. Maybe they just, I don't know. I don't know if that means anything. Or maybe he just snored, or she snored, and they had to get away from each other to sleep.
It could have been.
I mean, that's how we do it in my house sometimes.
Yeah,
so
some people do that.
Yeah.
So it's not out of the ordinary. He could have just gone out.
I don't want to read too much into it, because it didn't sound like it was a marital problem there was anything between the two of them that was wrong.
Yeah.
I just found that it just seemed interesting to me that he was sleeping in the garage. So those two cases, those were the ones that kind of made that pedophile thing or the theory kind of be a little more plausible to me. And the other thing, this is the car that left that morning. Someone observed that car leaving. I can't find who actually saw that car leaving. Was it the employee when he was pulling up? Did he see a white truck leaving with a man inside? Who gave them this thing?
Yeah.
I have not seen that.
That's a good question.
So, I mean, there had to have been people in the area if someone saw the truck leaving. I mean, but maybe, although again, they were on a highway, people probably were driving past the whole time. But I mean, one house, how often do you notice a truck or a car pulling out of a house on the side of a highway if you're going like 60 miles an hour?
You wouldn't. I mean, it had to have been someone. It could have been someone driving by that knew the family and thought it was odd.
Yeah.
And also people want to help. So they're probably just searching their mind and trying to,
Right.
I think I was near the Shorts house.
Yeah.
And I think that was a white truck or I thought it was maybe a brown truck.
Yeah.
And I think that the police probably have all kinds of tips like that that have come in. It's just that. However this happened, I hope they find out who did it.
Yeah.
Because.
I would really like to see this one solved.
So I guess they didn't find any additional evidence when they drained the dam?
No.
Wow.
They didn't find it. I don't think they found anything. I mean, nothing, if they found something, it obviously didn't lead them to anything new. Because that was.
Where did they
really
find
the end of
her?
The active investigation?
They found her in a wooded area.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like it was just like maybe like a woods off of near like a little lake or river or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know that area at all down there. Excuse me. That's the Short murder.
Okay. So if people have tips on this, would they just call the FBI?
Yeah, we can put that up too.
Okay.
I mean, we can put that up. We can put up some articles about the case and the pictures and everything too.
Awesome.
So yeah, that's that's the short murder. I've been wanting to do this one for a while. I just wanted to make sure until we were able to do a lot of get a lot of note taking on this one before I we did it.
There's
so
there's a lot here.
Yeah.
I definitely think that it was related to Jennifer being the target. I think that the person knows the family.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't know the family well, they know they were probably watching the family. And
right.
I would guess they probably had communication with one of the family members.
Right.
Whether it was Mary or Michael.
Yeah.
Not that they were like the best friend of the family. But
right.
I would be interested. I mean, they said they don't have close family around.
Right.
So when you don't have close family around, you kind of make your own family by whoever's living near you.
And, you know, that I didn't write this down, but you just, when you say that, because they always say that most crimes, or most, like, sexual crimes are committed by someone close to you, or someone you know, an acquaintance, or a family member, or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously they didn't find any evidence leading them to this, but it could have been someone Jennifer trusted.
Yeah, absolutely.
It could have been someone she saw constantly at practice, or at church, or at school. I mean, that it's more common for someone to be assaulted by someone they know than a stranger. So if it was that case, maybe she may have gone with him voluntarily, not knowing what had happened with her parents. And she's someone you trust, the kids are going to go with them. So yeah, I don't know that that was the case, but it seems plausible with the pedophile theory too, because I think that she had to have known, or at least known of them, or Michael knew them, or
there had to have been more than one person.
You think?
So you're saying that Michael was in the garage and Mary was in the house?
Well, if it was a, because aren't 22 calibers really small? I don't know anything
they
about
are,
guns.
But I would have woken up. I would have woken up if I had heard.
Yeah. Could they have used maybe, I don't know if those kinds of guns can use a silencer.
I have no idea. But I,
if someone with gun,
somebody had to come in and kill both parents in order to take the child.
Maybe they got Jennifer first.
No way. There's no way.
Yeah, that's right. She would have wanted to know about mom and dad.
Mom and, well, she would have made noise.
Yeah.
Unless they threatened her.
Unless, or they came in and said, your mom and dad just left, we're going to go meet them, and didn't let her see into the bedrooms to know they were there. There's an emergency. Your mom called me to come over and get you and take you to the emergency.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I can think. But I mean, honestly too, though, when,
but killing both, to shoot both parents.
Yeah.
Like, let's say that the mother was shot first, and the father was shot second. Don't you think that Michael would have heard the gunshot? I mean, I guess you're right. If he's a heavy sleeper, and if he's in the garage.
Yeah. We don't know how far apart they are, but that could be really well insulated.
He may have not heard it. Yeah, I'm just.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point.
But maybe they knew that. That's the other thing. It's like, whoever this was had to have known.
They knew where to go for both. How would you know that Michael was in the garage sleeping? How would you know to go there if you didn't know the family?
Yeah.
Like, you don't go to the garage to look for a sleeping person. You go to the bedroom to look for a sleeping person.
Yeah.
Like, that part, that's just weird.
Yeah. And I don't know how their garage is. I mean, let's say that it's closed. I'm assuming the garage door was closed.
Yeah, I would imagine.
He was sleeping in there.
And, you know, I wonder, because it looked like the house that, the picture that I saw, it looked like one of those small, older brick homes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, those have detached garages. Maybe he had actually, maybe the garage was set up to be a sleeping area, or to be like an extra room that was, maybe it was insulated. They didn't use it for parking cars. They just used it for like an extra rec room or something. Then that would have made sense, because if the garage was detached, it would have been less likely to hear it in the house. to hear a gunshot in the house.
I want
to look at the pictures of the house again.
Yeah, I would want to know too if, like, when the investigators arrive, mm-hmm. if there was a light on in the garage.
Yeah.
Because let's say that this person comes at night. Mm-hmm. So the reason I'm asking is if this person came at night, and let's say they didn't know the family that well.
Okay.
They just saw Jennifer, followed him home one yeah. night, whatever. They see the garage light on mm-hmm. because Michael was out there and he, like, fell asleep on the couch watching
right.
TV or something.
Right.
In the garage. Let's say he has a TV in his garage.
Right.
Falls asleep out there. And they see the light mm-hmm. and they look in there and they see him sleeping mm-hmm. and they're like, okay, I need to...
Yeah.
I'm going to get rid of him quickly. And I know there's only yeah. three people that live here.
Right.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
No, that...
And that I guess they didn't have a dog.
Yeah, I didn't see anything
didn't
about it. That,
dog.
No.
Person had to have known that.
Yeah, because that a dog was going to let you know that they've seen you.
Yeah.
And they don't want you in their house.
I really...
Yeah, there's so much that I want to know more about that they just don't release the details on.
Yeah.
And maybe it's details that we would have known if we had known... Or been watching this originally when
are there any episodes online of like
I have
being...
not found one, but you know what? I bet I don't know. That's a good question. I'm gonna see if I didn't see anything like come up as a suggestion.
We should definitely see if there's a video
because
sometimes they show the house.
Yeah. I'll like do a search on like ID Discovery and all those other crime channels that are on my TV all the time. Maybe Forensics Files.
Yeah.
I don't know if there would be one of those if this case really warranted a Forensics Files.
Well, is there anything else?
No.
Well, no, if anybody else that's listening has
yeah.
a theory, I would love to know because I think we've hit pretty much all of the evidence
yeah.
that was there. Again, I'm going to post the article that talked about the police corruption. But listeners,
right.
I want to know, like, we want to know
yeah.
what you guys think. And if there's any, if you think that this might have been something to do with the police corruption in the area,
mm-hmm.
or whether you think it was a pedophile, or
yeah.
do you think it could have been someone that knew the family?
Yeah. Or if you were around Virginia in that time
yeah,
period, if you remember seeing anything about this story.
Yeah, definitely. If we have any listeners in that part of Virginia, we'd love to hear.
Or even in Richmond, I would imagine that would be
yeah.
a big story up here, too.
Yeah, that can kind of
and Roanoke.
Give us some information
yeah.
on what was going on at the time.
Yeah.
It's really cool to hear about from people that knew or that were, like, paying attention during that
yeah.
time.
When we actually watched the news instead
yeah,
of just, like, scanning CNN for it.
Exactly. But that's all. I think that's all. That's
yeah.
all we have for the day.
Yep.
All right.
So, yeah. And if you haven't listened to the minisode, go back and listen to that.
Yeah, we're going to do another one in a couple
good.
Days. I'm going to... the one before was on Katina Parker. And I honestly can't remember what the next one's going to be on. But it's in the article that I posted.
Oh, cool.
So, basically, I'm just going over the article.
Okay.
Cool. Anyway. All right. Cool.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks,
well,
guys.
Follow
Thanks
us Twitter. You know the drill. I'm not even going to go through them all. Y'all know where we are. Find us. Please review on iTunes. That's the one thing I will say.
Yeah.
Help us get moved up in the stats, please. Yeah.
All
Thanks,
right.
guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Crime Quest. It is our goal to make this as informative as possible. If you heard something amazing and want to give us a review, please do so on iTunes along with a rating. If you have suggestions for show topics, please send them to crimequestpod@gmail.com. Also, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @CrimeQuestPod. Thanks! Crime Quest would like to give special thanks to Hemi Haynes for putting together our music for this episode. Thanks, Hemi.